The following Dharma talk was recorded in February 2014 in Kansas City, Kansas. It is one of eight recordings from the retreat called Awakening with Insight, Cultivating Concentration and Mindfulness, taught by Shyla Catherine and Phil Jones. The retreat was sponsored by Mid-America Dharma. If you like this recording, you can find more talks at www.midamericadharma.org. For questions, we welcome your emails sent to info@midamericadharma.org. Shyla Catherine is the founder of Insight Meditation South Bay in Mountain View, California. She has practiced meditation since 1980 with more than 8 years of accumulated silent retreat experience. Shyla has authored two books, Focused and Fearless, A Meditator's Guide to States of Deep Joy, Calm, and Clarity, and Wisdom Wide and Deep, A Practical Handbook for Mastering Jhana and Vipassana. Find out more about Shyla at www.imsb.org. Phil Jones has been teaching insight meditation since 1996. He has studied with teachers from Spirit Rock and the Insight Meditation Society, and graduated from the first Community Dharma Leader Program in 2000. Phil has served on Mid-America Dharma's Board of Directors since the mid-1990s. Find out more about Phil at www.silentmindopenheart.org.
So I'd like to start this retreat with a talk on deep peace. I think we all want peace, both world peace and perhaps more intimately, inner peace. Perhaps some of you have even come to meditation as a way of discovering peace or cultivating more peace in your own life. The simple meditation practices that we teach can indeed bring us peace. In the Samyutta Nikaya, we have a beautiful description of mindfulness with breathing that says, "This concentration by mindfulness of breathing, when developed and cultivated, is peaceful and sublime, an ambrosial, pleasant dwelling, and it disperses and quells right on the spot evil, unwholesome states whenever they arise." Now that is a good advertisement for meditation. I mean, what a message. But you can't buy it in a bottle. It doesn't come in some convenient, easy-to-open package. It takes cultivation. But it doesn't need to be a painful undertaking. The opposite of peace is conflict, stress, struggle. We experience agitation whenever the mind is affected by greed, by hatred, by fear, craving, and delusion. Why is it that when we all seem to want peace and happiness, that people find themselves repeatedly enmeshed in conflict and struggle? Perhaps we're searching for happiness in the wrong places. Outside of ourselves, in relationships, social roles, through wealth, professional achievements, family, or even the happiness that comes through music or art. We don't need to necessarily avoid these engagements, but perhaps it would be wise to not situate our happiness in any of these realms. Because satisfaction cannot be found in a world of conditioned things, of possessions, of impermanent activities, and of identities. It's simply the wrong place to look for happiness or peace. So in the search for a source of lasting peace, we must turn our attention away from all these worldly pursuits and turn our attention inward. In the Sutta Nipata, it says, The monk must look for peace within himself and not in any other place. The aim of peace has been close to my heart for as long as I can remember. You can probably remember times when you have an opportunity to make a wish, you know, just a simple wish. You know, whatever it might be, you find a penny and you make a wish. You have a birthday and you blow out a candle. Or you're just contemplating what your aspirations are in life. Some people wish for a very wholesome wish of happiness. But another very wholesome wish is to wish to be more peaceful. The Pali compound Santisukha combines these two and refers to a state of deep, peaceful happiness, the happiness of peace. Traditionally, this refers to a quality of realization, of release, the realization of Nibbana, or the unconditioned liberation of mind. We might consider it to be the deep contentment that comes with spiritual experiences and is associated with the liberating events of life. In this talk, I'd like to consider a few perspectives on peace. There really are many pragmatic expressions of peace that are taught in the Buddhist tradition, and they parallel a progression of types of happiness. And these two approaches, an approach to peace and an approach to happiness, are very compatible and overlap a great deal in the Pali Canon. One kind of sukha, of happiness, is the happiness that comes from practicing virtue through the practice of sila, or keeping the precepts, maintaining harmless and blameless actions. Because when our actions are clean and our intentions are pure, there's a deep ease to the mind. And in that absence of conflict, we experience no remorse. And so our minds are at peace. A second source of happiness arises when we guard our sense doors. And we guard our senses by bringing mindfulness to any sensory experience. Because mindfulness allows us to know what is presently occurring rather than just react habitually to it. We learn to respond wisely. When we're mindful, we're not going to be swept up in seduction, addiction, fury, or habitual reactions. And so this brings a deep integrity and inner strength to our lives and prevents agitation from corrupting the mind. Things happen in life, and some things will be pleasant and agreeable, and some things will be disagreeable and quite unpleasant. When favorable conditions arise, we might reflect on these opportunities so that we use them well to prepare ourselves for times when less favorable conditions are likely to occur. In the Anguttara Nikaya, the Buddha said, describing various unwelcome things that might occur, he said, before this unwelcome, disagreeable, displeasing thing happens, let me first make an effort for the attaining of the as yet unattained, the reaching of the as yet unreached, the realization of the as yet unrealized, so that, endowed with that Dhamma, I will live in peace, even when that unwelcome thing happens. It's not exactly the Boy Scout thing of being prepared, right? Or it was like Girl Scouts or whatever, where you're prepared for all things. But we take the opportunities when we have the strength and we have little difficulties to work with them. We take the opportunity that we have in our life to carve out some time for retreat and to cultivate the mind We have the opportunity now, so we use it fully. Now, the difficulties that the Buddha listed were of the disagreeable things that might happen, included snakes, scorpions, stumbling, falling, digestion, bile, phlegm, vicious beasts like lions, tigers, bears, criminal gangs, bandits, vicious non-human spirits, and it went on. We might have a slightly different list, but the idea here is very simple. We take the opportunities that we have, and it's a wonderful thing that each of you has done to carve out the time in your busy lives to come on retreat, to cultivate the mind, to develop peace. And this training encourages a quality of mind that will be undisturbed, regardless as to whether the conditions that we experience are pleasant or unpleasant. We won't be troubled by either. You might wonder, pleasant experiences aren't that troubling. But if they stimulate craving, they actually are troubling. We develop instead a mind that remains peaceful, happy, and equanimous through all the encounters that occur at the sense doors. And so we restrain the senses. We don't go seeking sensory stimulation. If we taste something and it's pleasant, great. If we taste something and it's not so pleasant, equally great. If we see something lovely as we're walking, lovely. If we see something wretched looking while we're walking, equally fine, just fine. Now, a third source of happiness is the quiet bliss that's associated with the concentrated states of deep absorption called the jhanas. There's a deep equanimity that saturates all states of samadhi. It permeates the mind with a sense of profound peace, almost blissful peace. The fourth jhana in particular, and the immaterial absorptions, those absorptions where the mind rests in a profound stability with the perception of infinite space or infinite consciousness or emptiness. These are called imperturbable states. The Pali term is anenja, imperturbable, but they're also called peaceful abidings. With these attainments, with these peaceful abidings, nothing agitates the mind, because the mind will have already freed itself from the corrupting forces of the hindrances, and it will not in these states be agitated by even sensory contact. And so there's a deep ease and peace that comes in these concentrated states. But the final piece in the Buddhist tradition is not concentration, and it is not death when we say rest in peace. The ultimate peace that we rest in is the deep peace of release. We might sense this peace with the ease that we feel when we're letting go and not grasping. A well-developed mind is not attached to anything in this world. In the Satipatthana Sutta, it says, one abides independent, not clinging to anything in this world. Anicito is the term for independent, so that the mind is not dependent upon, not seeking support from anything outside, not struggling to grasp and hold on, and not perpetuating cravings, not agitated by desire. The simple practice of letting go can carry us to this profound experience of release. We sit, we meditate, and we will be letting go. First, we'll let go of a lot of the busyness and our responsibilities of our lives. can we let go of the stories that keep running through our heads when we sit down, and the commentary of whether we're doing it right or how it should be done. We'll let go of the judgments of how everybody else should be doing things. We'll let go of our entire past. And we can let go of our entire future. It doesn't matter what you did last week, last year, yesterday, 5 minutes ago. Let the past be gone. Let the attention rest in a peaceful experience with the present as it is. And then see what happens if you let go of that too. We may find we have stuff to let go of. Angers, grudges, expectations, worry, plans, projects, responsibilities, fantasies. A certain amount of meditation is simply being willing to work with the distracting thoughts until they settle down, and to connect with the present experience of simply sitting and breathing. It's an excellent training, but there is more to meditation than sitting and breathing. At some point, we will have calmed all the common distractions and find, it might be surprising, but find that indeed we are remarkably present. Then what? What do you do when you're actually mindful and present? When you're concentrated? When you are here and now? Then what? This is perhaps the place when the most interesting meditative investigation begins. It's when we can see our relationship to presently arisen states and know if and how we are creating any causes for suffering in the way we're relating to our present moment experience. As one of the more pithy and powerful verses in the Sutta Nipata states, "Dry up the remains of your past and have nothing for your future. If you do not cling to the present, then you can go from place to place in peace." In a way, we're setting our direction toward peace, to go wherever we go in peace, to aim for peace as not only our goal, but also our way, our vehicle. In the Metta Sutta, it begins, "What should be done by one skilled in the good so as to gain the state of peace? Is this, let him be able and upright, straightforward, easy to speak to, gentle and not proud, contented, easily supported, with few tasks, and living lightly. His faculties serene, prudent, and modest." And it goes on through the whole discourse. But it is this aim for peace is the very reason that loving kindness is undertaken as a practice. We don't do it just to be nice, to open our hearts to love. It's a practice that's undertaken by one who aims for the state of peace. In fact, the whole path that the Buddha taught could be described as a path of peace. In the middle-length discourses, the Buddha said, regarding various views and philosophical debates, he said, "Why have I left these things undeclared? Because it is unbeneficial. It does not lead to peace, direct knowledge, enlightenment. That is why I have left it undeclared." So he said a whole lot of topics that were debated and argued at his time aside. Why? because they never would lead to peace. In the Anguttara Nikaya, the number discourses of the Buddha, he says, when you know of certain things, that these things lead to complete revulsion, to dispassion, cessation, and peace, to direct knowledge, enlightenment, and nibbana, of such things you may be certain. This is the Dhamma. This is the discipline. This is the master's teaching. Throughout this discourse, we find this stock phrase linking significant terms that describe the goal. The first being revulsion, which a different translation of the same term is disenchantment, which some people prefer. So disenchantment, dispassion, cessation, peace, direct knowledge, enlightenment, nibbana. Here we find peace in very good company, don't we? Another sutta includes the same phrase. This discourse, this teaching was given to Vacca. Vacca, the speculative view that the world is eternal is a thicket of views, a wilderness of views, a contortion of views, a vacillation of views, a fetter of views. It is beset by suffering, by vexation, by despair, and by fever, and it does not lead to disenchantment, to dispassion, to cessation, to peace, to direct knowledge, to enlightenment, to nibbana. The aim of peace is the most fundamental context for our practice. But perhaps most directly, we find in the Middling Discourses the statement, this supreme state of sublime peace has been discovered by the Tathagata, that is liberation through not clinging. By understanding as they actually are, the origination, the disappearance, the gratification, the danger, and the escape in the case of the six bases of contact, the senses. Because that is the supreme state of sublime peace discovered by the Tathagata, that is liberation through not clinging. Here the direct link between peace and non-attachment, non-attachment to any experience of the senses, is unmistakable. Attachments are what agitate and disturb the mind. When we free ourselves from craving and clinging, peace is the result. But please don't worry if peace sounds far off, perhaps like an impossible to attain state. Sometimes when we look at the world, it seems so messed up that the ideal of world peace is discouraging. And sometimes when we look inside at our own minds and our petty, trivial concerns, we might wonder if it's even possible for us to discover inner peace within this little world of this mind and body with its senses and its perceptions. But as we begin this retreat, I want to encourage you to not worry. Just let go. Don't worry. To simply cherish this ultimate potential as a goal of peace. To nurture this wish for peace each step along the way. If we trust that we can aim our lives, our practice, and our aspirations in the direction of peace, then I trust we will eventually realize it. And it is a worthy aim. The peaceful state is the state of the liberated and awakened mind. In the Middling Discourses, it says, for this bhikkhus is the supreme noble peace, namely the pacification of lust, hate, and delusion. This is peace.